to a toad when it's struck by lightning? The same thing happens to everything else.
All the great dialogue in this movie, and we chose the worst fucking line in this whole thing.
It's one of the funniest lines in the history of movies.
Yeah, and it's probably the most famous line from this movie.
I agree, and I have a little note about that I'll get to shortly, but yes. It's very interesting.
Well, we're finally here. This is something that we've been talking about forever. It's been on the docket forever.
Years. I mean, when you and I first started talking about restarting the podcast and doing something like this, which was like 3 years, 2.5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. X-Men was like one of the first things we talked about doing.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I guess we should introduce ourselves. Oh. I'm Mike.
I'm Matt.
Old School Movie Podcast. Typically, we review movies 10 years and older. Sometimes we do some other shit on here, too.
And despite what both of us care to admit, this movie is 24 years old.
Yes.
Dear God.
So we started off with the original X-Men. Yes, I know this is not from the movie, but...
Oh, it goes hard. It goes so hard.
All three of our... Well, I don't know if the third one deserves this theme song at the beginning.
No, the third one's just going to be like, womp, womp, womp.
I know.
The whole time.
So, again, like you said, this movie is 24 years old.
Yeah, wow. Should we talk about a little backstory to this movie first? A little personal backstory?
Yes.
Okay. Before we get into the actual film, this movie for me was an extremely important part of my childhood and a very pivotal film for me. I grew up, I make no secret about it, I'm not a comic book guy, I'm not interested in any of this stuff, but X-Men was always like the one that I was interested in. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we just played the cartoon music. The cartoon was huge. I grew up on it. I know you did too.
Yep.
Loved it. The only comic books I ever read were X-Men comic books. And when this movie was coming out, the trailer is still burned into my head. It blew 9-year-old Matt's brain because it didn't look like the goofy kids show. It looked adult. Now, in retrospect, it's not exactly, but it looked so adult. And when I was a kid, my parents would let me see pretty much any movie. I mean, by the year 2000, I had already seen every James Bond film that was out multiple times and a bunch of other stuff I probably shouldn't have seen. And so when this trailer dropped, I was like, oh, man, I got it. Like, I'm so excited for this movie. And they didn't want to let me see this movie. My parents they never said no to me seeing a movie as a kid. Now, obviously, I wasn't exactly asking to watch, like, American History X or something like that. But but them saying no to me was just...
They didn't let you watch Showgirls?
No, they let me watch Showgirls. No, oh, okay. No, I'm kidding.
Girls are not sane. Yeah.
No, of course not. Like, I wasn't asking to watch that kind of stuff, but I figured, like, hey, I love the comic. I love the comic books. Like, this movie looks rad as hell.
Yeah.
I have got to go see this. And I this was also right around the time my parents got religious. And so maybe the theme, the dark looking trailer, the evolution thing, maybe that was scaring them off. I don't know. But they did not want to let me go see this movie. And my mom's best friend at the time, finally, who was a wonderful person and sadly passed away not too far after this. She finally got my mom and was like, what are you doing here? Like, you let him watch all this other shit. You're scared of the X-Men? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
I think your mom was anti-mutant back in those days.
She would have been the senator trying to pass the Mutant Registration Act. And so me and Julie, shout out to Julie, RIP, we won this battle, and I got to go see X-Men in theaters. And let me tell you, if it wasn't the coolest, most mind-blowing thing I had ever seen in my 9 years on this earth, I fell madly in love. So yeah, I'm not going to be able to talk about this movie with any type of like, neutral stances. I'm so nostalgic for it. And I watched it so many times.
So for me, I grew up with the comics, reading a lot of X-Men comics. Not so many older comics. I want to say probably late 80s, early 90s was my jam.
Okay.
They had two teams back in those days in the comics. There was a gold team, which was led by Storm. Mm-hmm. And there was a blue team, which was led by Cyclops. And each team, each faction of the X-Men had their own teams, and they had their own stories and things like that.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. I watched the cartoon 1,000 fucking times. It does not hold up by today's animation standards, at least.
It's not Batman the Animated Series. It doesn't hold up. It's. I watched a couple episodes last week, and, you know, for the sake of nostalgia, like, I was into it, but...
Well, I think I had told you and one of our friends, Lewis, we were talking about X-Men 97 coming out, which we may cover, too, down the road. And I said, have either one of you went back and watched these? And you guys were like, nah, not really. So that probably propelled, you know, or
it did, yeah,
inspired you to go watch these.
Very much so. When you brought it up, I thought, no, man, like, I haven't seen the cartoon.
They don't hold up.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen the cartoon since probably when this movie came out.
Yeah.
Because this movie comes out, and I'm like, well, this is better. Like, this is better than the cartoons. I'm an adult now.
Yeah.
I can watch this, not that.
I watched this with a bunch of my friends. I think I was 2000. I would have been 17, 16, okay. 17. I have the same experience. And when I went back and watched this again, I told Matt, I don't know, because I was sick for the 47th time this year. So I'm watching this in bed, and I got a little emotional. I don't know why, dude. But
there's something about this movie that...
This first movie, too. And we're getting to the second movie after this one, but... Mm-hmm,
the good one.
I didn't have the same feelings for the second one that I did for this one, which is very weird, because X2 is highly regarded as the best... Okay. In this entire run.
Interesting. Okay, I will, no spoiler, I'll just say I think the second one is a better movie, but I know what you mean. I don't feel the way about X2 as I do with the first X-Men. I could go watch this movie again right now, and I just saw it the other day.
Yeah, and you know, Spider-Man had already come out at this point.
No, Spider-Man was 2002.
Okay, so this was the first one.
This was the first one.
So maybe that's what it is.
Okay.
And I, you know, it's funny because you know how I am, and I'm a stickler for lore, mm-hmm. and I have a lot of problems with this.
Oh, okay. I want to hear them.
But I'll explain some of that as we go on. This was the beginning of...
the dark and grittyification of...
Right. So the Ultimate Universe had just come out then. Mm-hmm. Which they tried to do a more modern take on things these days.
For modern audiences.
Right. Even the MCU took a lot of that from the Ultimates.
Okay.
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 So with this, like the black leather suits, that's from the Ultimates.
Got it.
Wolverine not wearing a mask, that's from the Alternates. Ultimates.
Okay.
So those kinds of things they took from that, and I think that was a huge mistake. Maybe it wouldn't have worked back then.
I want to talk about the context of that because I don't disagree with you. You know what? Let's put a pause and do some stats and then let's come back to the, because I want to talk about that first thing, because I thought the same thing at the time and my mind has actually changed.
The score, by the way, is Michael Kamen, which I think this score is great.
Well, speaking of the score, I think the score is fantastic.
And this composer changes in X2.
Yeah. Weirdly, in X2, the composer is also the editor, a thing I've never seen before.
It's one of Bryan Singer's boys. And not that kind of boy.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. I have stories. Yes. Okay, so let's do some stats. X-Men came out in the year 2000. It is directed by allegedly Bryan Singer. I'm sorry, Bryan Singer. I'm used to saying allegedly whenever I say Bryan Singer's name. It's much safer.
Whenever you invoke his name.
Whenever I invoke his name, I just say allegedly so as not to get sued.
Right.
So allegedly Bryan Singer did direct this movie. Budget was $75 million. Pretty big budget for 2000 for taking a gamble on a Marvel movie. That's a solid budget. $296 million at the box office. Very successful. 82% on Rotten Tomatoes. 64% on Metacritic. Boy, Metacritic is just always tough.
Yes.
Normally I don't talk about screenplay and stuff, but this one's kind of interesting, so I figured we'd mention it. The screenplay is by David Hayter, who also wrote the screenplay for X2, but... This movie was one of those that was stuck in production hell for a long time. It was in production since like 1984 or something like that. So a bunch of people had worked on it. A couple people that we're going to hear a lot about in the future. Christopher McQuarrie did a pass on this script. He did so much work on it that he was actually offered a writing credit, but he turned it down because he felt that David Hayter's vision was more on screen. Joss Whedon did a pass on this. His script was rejected for being too expensive, and also they said, quote, had too much of a quick-witted pop culture referencing tone, and thank God we're never going to have to deal with that issue again. Right? Yeah. I feel like we're seeing the future. Joss Whedon claims that he wrote that terrible storyline, that was from his version of the script, and the reason according to him, it made a lot more sense within the context of his script.
It wasn't supposed to be delivered like that either.
That's what he said. He said it was supposed to be like quick and quippy.
Yeah.
Imagine Joss Whedon doing quips. That's
That was Halle Berry's decision to play that straight.
And I guess for the better and the worse, because it's a terrible line, but it is funny.
Yeah.
This is the first production credit for Kevin Feige. Before this, he was a production assistant. And he got this job. He was young. He was like 26. He got this job because he is a huge Marvel fan, and he had a huge knowledge of the X-Men, and he really worked and fought to keep this as close to the comics as the studio would allow it to be. I asked you the other day, did you know what his job on set was? And you said no. Are you still unspoiled by what his job on set was?
No, I don't know.
Great. So, I don't want to diminish Kevin Feige, what he did for this movie, because apparently he did quite a lot of work, and he really worked hard to make this as comic accurate as possible, so kudos to him. But, as we mentioned, Bryan Singer has something of a reputation. And to be clear, he has never been charged with anything or, until a couple of years ago, accused of anything that was illegal. But he is known to love to offer jobs to young men on his movies in exchange, potentially, for certain things. And allegedly, he was doing that on the set of X-Men.
Oh my God.
Now, I tried to verify this. I couldn't find this source anywhere else, but at least according to the Wikipedia of this movie, Kevin Feige was flown out to set to rein in Bryan Singer because he was being very difficult to work with, and he was doing what I just said. Google it if you want more info. Do it in safe mode. So that was Kevin Feige's job, apparently, was to babysit Bryan Singer and make sure he wasn't getting too weird. Yeah, so I don't know. I thought that was kind of a funny anecdote that, you know, and it's amazing. We're not getting too much into the Bryan Singer stuff. He's a very talented director. And again, like, he's never been accused of doing anything illegal that I know of. But it is funny how he's always had this reputation and it's just followed him in Hollywood. But it, like, never really affected his career until recently.
There's a reason why he has that reputation. Where there's smoke, there's fire, usually.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's pretty, like, these rumors are, like, pretty out there. Anyway, but I do think he's a talented director. I get why he kept getting work, and he wasn't accused of doing anything illegal. He just had some proclivities. You mentioned, almost done with the stats, you mentioned Michael Kamen. If we could, I'd like to just do the Bond connections now because I think we'll save a lot of time.
Sure.
Michael Kamen, of course, was the composer for License to Kill. I love that score. He also did, I believe he did Die Hard and Lethal Weapon 2. Could be wrong about that. Beyond that, Halle Berry, of course, was Jinx in Die Another Day. She is Storm here. Famke Janssen was Xenia Onatopp in GoldenEye.
Indeed.
Onatopp. Hugh Jackman was offered the role of James Bond, at least kind of.
Really?
When they were auditioning, the way he tells it, when they were auditioning for actors, presumably before Casino Royale, he got the phone call from his agent and from Bond, called his agent and said, you know, would he be interested? Because he was a huge star at this point. Obviously, he'd already done the first two X-Men, and he kind of had to juggle, like, well, do I really want to be Wolverine and James Bond? And he ultimately kind of turned it down. So it's a little muddy if they actually offered him the role or if they just wanted to, like, see if he was interested in the role. But yeah, there is a world where Hugh Jackman could have been Bond. And honestly, I could see it. I could totally see it.
So Sir Ian McKellen is Magneto in this. Mm-hmm. And right off the bat, let me just say, I think the absolute highlights of this entire movie is Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart.
I totally agree. It's the crux of the movie is the relationship between those two.
Their interactions are, like, I could sit there and watch those two have those interactions just in a room without any kind of fighting.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a lot of X2. We're going to get to X2, but that's most of that.
But Ian McKellen was offered the role of Gandalf and almost had to turn this down, and Bryan Singer rearranged the filming schedule to make sure he could play Magneto. Mm. So he was able to do both.
It's brilliant casting. Yes. I mean, it helps that you get two of the best actors literally in the world.
Agreed.
To hold your movie up. I will say, those two are the highlight of the movie. I think Hugh Jackman's very good as Wolverine. We'll talk about that in a second. But it does come at the expense of other characters. If I had a critique of this movie...
We're going to get here now, huh?
Yeah, well, no, I like, okay, my general thoughts are this held up so much better than I thought it would. I was really concerned.
Me too.
That I was going to throw this on, and I was thinking like, oh man, I haven't seen this movie in 20 years. It's not going to live up to my nostalgia brain, but it mostly did. I really enjoyed it. I'd go watch it again. I'm probably buying the 4K. Like, that's the highest compliment I can give to a movie.
Yeah.
I think it mostly held up. If I had a critique again, it would be that a lot of the characters don't feel like characters. Like, Storm mostly just stands there and nods her head. Cyclops mostly just waits to shoot people in the eyes with, or, you know, with his laser.
That's where I thought we were going here, because
yeah,
both of us are huge Cyclops fans.
Yes, and he is done dirty by these movies. But I also get it, because if you have this many characters, you can't make every character super interesting or fleshed out. But I genuinely don't understand the decision to just make him a non-entity in all of the movies.
It's even worse in the second one and the third one.
Well, he's barely in the second one, and they kill him immediately in the third.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty awful.
Yeah.
He's not treated well in these movies.
No, but even here.
Keeping the white man down, I'm telling you. If they made this movie now, this exact movie now, there would be 100 videos on YouTube talking about how X-Men has gone woke and how it's ruining the mythology of the franchise.
Those sunglasses a Cyclops has, though, they're like custom specs from Oakley.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact brand name, but I love those sunglasses.
They're awesome. They're dope. That's why I got Oakley's when I was 13. Because they look really cool. No, but like, yeah, Okay, my thoughts on... Let's talk about Wolverine for a second. For the longest time, I would have said, I think it's incredibly stupid that they made Wolverine the central focus of these movies. But in retrospect, I kind of get it. If you're going to do a movie like this and with this many characters, you need somebody that can sort of center it and act as, you know, your fish out of water, the person that, the stand-in for the audience, essentially, right? Like, movies like this kind of need that.
Right.
And so, obviously, Hugh Jackman is incredibly charismatic, and he's a great actor, and I think he's very good as Wolverine, even though I have one complaint. So I kind of get why they... did it. It makes sense to me. You got to center this movie around something, and choosing him sort of makes sense as the guy who doesn't really understand this world, and he's discovering it along with you as the audience.
This is some funny shit that I was reading about Hugh Jackman when he was getting ready for the role of Wolverine. Hugh Jackman admits that when he initially took on the role as Wolverine, he studied wolves to develop his character, since he thought that Wolverine must allude to wolves. Bryan Singer later explained to him that a Wolverine is a different kind of animal. It is the largest species of the weasel family and is found in Northern Europe and some parts of North America.
Well, okay, while we're on that, let's talk about the one issue that I have with Wolverine. I'll just say this. As a short...
I knew you were going...
...hairy man... I think this is, frankly, offensive, this casting. This movie should be canceled because this is short, hairy man erasure, and I won't stand for it. I demand to be represented in a film.
If this was made these days, he would be wearing mocap, and they would shorten him down like do in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, you're right. But, yeah, so, I mean, obviously, this was a big complaint at the time. It's still kind of a complaint that Wolverine is supposed to be this... He's supposed to be like a Wolverine. He's supposed to be like a wild animal, like a
in
short...
In the comics, he's 5'3".
That's wild.
And... Hugh Jackman is 6'2". He's one of the few actors who is actually fucking huge. Because mm-hmm. most, like, you know, Tom Cruise, he's like 5'7", 5'8", you know, so Sly.
He's maybe 5'7".
Yeah, Sly, same thing.
Oh, like, is he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's short too.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman's enormous. And he doesn't really fit as Wolverine. And frankly, I think it's annoying. Because in reality, I look more like Wolverine than Hugh Jackman looks like Wolverine. Except I'm fat. But I could change. I could take Ozempic.
There you go.
So that's kind of my only complaint, really, is everybody feels like a stock kind of cardboard character most of the time, with the exception of Magneto, Professor X, and Wolverine. Everyone else is just kind of standing around waiting to use their powers. Halle Berry has like two lines in this movie, and one of them's that one.
That goes double for the Brotherhood of Mutants, because...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Mystique has more to do in this role, but mm-hmm. Toad and Sabretooth, like... They don't have much moments to shine. Sabretooth hardly does anything except fight in this.
They're basically just the henchmen, right? Like
right.
That's what they're there for. They're not. There's no ideology coming from them. It's just They're just the henchmen. They're there to do fights.
Well, therein lies some of the problem I have with the setup here and looking back at this. And I had the same problems when I originally saw it. Wolverine and Sabretooth, the first time they meet up, act like they don't know each other.
Yeah, okay. I figured you were going to bring this up.
Now, why is that? Well, I guess one could argue that Logan has lost his memory.
But Sabretooth also doesn't react in a way that would suggest he knows
There's
Wolverine.
Subtle hints, like Magneto takes the dog tags that Sabretooth took off of Logan, and he goes and grabs them back because he wants them for some reason. But they don't really get into, like, they've got this past together, you know?
Yeah.
So that was kind of a letdown for me. And then, what was the other thing I was going to mention? I don't know, but that's the first thing that comes to mind for me as far as, like, the lore problems.
Well,
but
you're very into the lore of these things, and I get that because you've read all of this, right?
Well, this is in the cartoon as well.
Yeah, I know. For me, I'm much more forgiving of a movie taking creative license if they want to do something different. It's why I love the Mandarin in Iron Man 3.
Fuck you.
I'm kidding. I don't love the Mandarin. I just like the Mandarin.
He loves the twist, people.
I love the twist, and I also, for being honest, it's kind of funny how much it annoys you. there's that too.
Well, yeah, of course.
I think it's an excellent twist. Top five in the history of Hollywood for sure. That's really my only complaints is the characterization.
Now I'm rooting for that female 007.
Oh God, just to twist the knife in me. Hey, that would kill you too.
Burns, doesn't it?
Sucks, doesn't it? You little asshole. like the Mandarin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's Helen Hunt as James Bond. Good luck. Hope you're miserable.
Oh shit.
Anyway, I want to go back to talking about the changes to the costumes, which was a little bit of a letdown, and like the kind of, to me, this is the first example. This is 2000. This is kind of the first example of we're going to do a thing, we're going to do a comic book or something silly, but we're going to make it dark and gritty, right? Obviously, that became the trend throughout most of the 2000s. You could argue Blade did that too, but Blade was always a darker thing, so I don't think that counts. One thing that I read that was interesting was that this was coming off the failure that was Batman and Robin, which was like the campiest, goofiest thing ever made. So, I you put yourself in producer shoes and all of a sudden you kind of understand why they're saying, no, let's not do bright yellow spandex and crazy costumes. Let's do leather suits and keep it dark and grounded and realistic.
Well, I think part of the thing, one of your complaints was like the other characters don't stand out. You take away the uniqueness of each one of those characters by not having them in at least a somewhat comic book accurate costume. That's my argument.
That's fair. I think that is a good point. I'm not saying the black suits were a good decision. I'm just saying in the moment, I can understand why that was on people's heads. I agree with you. If you're not going to give them characters, as in fleshed out, they're people with personalities. Yeah, give Cyclops his blue and yellow spandex and give Wolverine his suit. And
Bryan Singer didn't allow comic books on set. I guess a lot of the cast just read them anyways on their own.
Yeah, Bryan Singer was like, we can't have comic books on set. This might attract children, and we couldn't possibly have that around here.
Well, his research for this, too, he just watched the animated series. All 70, I think it's 78 episodes.
Really?
Yeah. That was his research on this. So, it's interesting. Like, I don't know what his issue was with the comics versus the animated, because the animated was pretty close to the comic books. I mean, it wasn't far off.
You know, I'll just throw something out because this is not the first time I've heard this. Tim Burton did the exact same thing with Batman, where he was just like, I don't know, I didn't read any Batman.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder has clearly only ever read one comic in his life, and it's The Dark Knight Returns. Oftentimes, these directors, they're not comic fans. And I do, now it's probably more acceptable to be into the comics, but then I would kind of imagine there was an element of them looking down on that sort of thing. Like, no, we're not going to do, those are children's books. We're doing something a little more elevated. And don't forget, Bryan Singer was just coming off The Usual Suspects. I mean, this is not a guy who's like steeped in comic lore. This is a serious director.
Bryan Singer turned this movie down three times too, because he thought comic books were unintelligible literature.
Well, there you go. I think that's your answer.
He did read some comics, I guess, leading up to this, but I think the majority of the research was the animated series. And then he was able to find the themes we get from X-Men, which we can discuss that right now.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I think this is why I've always liked X-Men, because it's super political. Or maybe it's more accurate to say it's X-Men does social commentary very well. It has a lot to say, mm-hmm. and it's laying it on pretty thick. But I don't hate that. I like that. I'm okay with not being subtle. I mean, we open immediately with Jean Grey fighting against the Mutant Registration Act. And you could take her speech and apply that to civil rights, gay rights, immigrant rights, like anything. It can fit on anything.
Sure.
I mean, Magneto is a survivor of the Holocaust. Oh, yeah. I mean, God, this completely forgot. This movie opens in Auschwitz.
Yeah.
There's another thing I wanted to bring up, which is that the entire thing is taking itself so seriously. This is not Avengers where they're winking at the camera every 5 minutes. It's a silly thing. Like, it's a goofy movie, but they're all playing it so straight.
You mean this doesn't feel like Thor?
Thank God. I mean, no.
Well, the difference, I think, with mutants compared to, like, gay rights or whatever, all those people are still normal human beings. What we're talking about here, this is a lot more complicated, because these are people, like they said, who can walk through walls, mm-hmm. who could control people with their minds.
But that's not too far away from saying gay people are dangerous because they're trying to molest your children or indoctrinate your youth or they're deviants. Like yeah, of course it's different because they have things, they have powers that can kill people and be dangerous, but it's not a million miles away from saying these people. Well, we say this about immigrants. We do this all the time. The people are immigrants flooding our cities, coming to do crime and murder people, rape people. There's a president who ran for office on that whole back of that.
Right.
They're bringing guns. They're bringing drugs. They're rapists. They're murderers. They're not sending their finest people. This is the same thing.
None of those immigrants, though, can control you with their mind.
No, but it's the
or
same.
Or control magnetism.
No. But it's an allegory, right? Like, it's the same. It's the same
I know.
Concept. It's,
I know.
Yeah. It's again, like, it's heavy handed. It's thick because it's for kids ultimately, but it's not so far away from the rhetoric we actually use around demonizing and othering people.
Sure.
I mean, this is what, I mean, you know, this, again, this thing opens in Auschwitz. Like, this is what the Nazis said about the Jews during World War II is they're dangerous. They're plotting against us. They're conspiring. They're controlling mm-hmm. us. They're mm-hmm. making our country worse. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, no, they can't walk through walls, but they do, they control the currency and they're ruining our country. Like, it's not that far off.
Right.
This is why I've always liked X-Men.
Yeah, all I'm doing is the other side, I guess, is a little more, I don't want to say justified, but like it's different when like you have a Colossus who can turn his body into steel and fucking
pick
up a tank and throw it through a building.
No, and I totally agree, which is there is an element to the senator in this who's trying to pass the Mutant Registration Act where it's like, yeah, no, you get it. You understand what they're going
sure.
for.
Yeah.
You, and even in X2, it gets a little bit worse where you're like, well, yeah, of course people are terrified. If people are being attacked, mm-hmm. it's understandable why they're completely terrified.
Yeah. Would you want a guy like Nightcrawler being able to do what he does?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's not it feels a little bit different because we always make fun of now of the villains who are like, well, they're not really villains. They're actually just misunderstood, or maybe they have a point or whatever. But in this case, yeah, you can understand why people feel this way. But again, I would compare it to real world stuff and say, well, in a way, you can understand why people feel that way towards groups they don't understand.
Sure.
It doesn't make it right, but I can understand it.
Well, the argument, too, can be that this kind of thinking and rhetoric creates the Brotherhood of Mutants.
Huh?
Right? And
yes.
So it's been an argument, too, that over-policing and trying to control everything creates terrorists.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the Brotherhood is in this.
We were talking about this before we watched the movie, that it's long been a sort of rumor that Professor Xavier and Magneto were based on MLK and Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can tell, that's not true. But the resemblance is there, right? Or at least the resemblance for how we view it in pop culture is there, where MLK was the peaceful, nonviolent one, and Malcolm X was the violent radical. I don't feel like doing history today, but that's not exactly true. But that's how we at least perceive things. Stan Lee, from what I can tell, didn't intend to do that, but he heard it and he liked it, and then he was kind of like, yeah, that's what I've been all along. Of course that's what I was going for.
Of course.
Yes, of course. I love the civil rights movement. But the allegory stands, at least how people view those two individuals. That's how you would view Professor X and Magneto, where one thinks peace is the way to achieve their goals and one thinks violence is the way to achieve their goals. Like, that has happened a lot throughout history.
As we said, the movie begins in Germany, mm-hmm. little Magneto, mm-hmm. and then it goes to this,
It's a Senate hearing.
I'm sorry, a Senate hearing Jean Grey's there speaking on Charles Xavier's behalf.
Yep.
And Magneto is there. And this is where we get our first interaction with Professor X and Magneto, and it's fucking great.
Yes, it is.
Magneto, it takes a while for him to even turn around. And when he does, the look on his face is just like, digging around in there, Charles. What are you looking for? And Xavier is like, I'm looking for hope, which is great, you know, because it's like these two don't hate each other.
No, they're friends.
But
they have ideological differences about how to achieve the same goal, which is to keep mutants safe and peaceful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Magneto tells him, there's a war coming, Charles. All I ask is you stay out of my way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So then it cuts to Rogue, who is in Alaska, like running away from home because she kissed a boy and basically almost killed him.
Yeah. She has the powers to suck the life out of people.
And this is where we get our first glimpse of Wolverine, which I think is great. The first way to introduce him.
This was also my introduction to cage fighting. I'm now a huge MMA fan. I'm not kidding. Like, this is the first time I saw somebody fight in a cage. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. He's beating people up because he's got an adamantium skeleton and he's immortal. So he can do that. I think it's a really cool introduction for him. It's gross. It's seedy. You watch this scene and you're like, I need to take a shower now. He's in some truck stop where they're fighting in a bar.
There's tobacco on the floor.
Yeah. Ooh, I wanted to bring that up. I love that Wolverine gets to smoke in this. And in X2 as well. And maybe in 3. But I think by around that point, smoking had kind of gotten verboten in films. But you just know these days, Wolverine's not smoking cigars in every scene.
Well, I hope that comes back in Deadpool because that's true to the character.
It's true to the character, but I don't know. We'll see. No, it's a great introduction. And then he sort of, you get the softer side of him because then he kind of takes in Rogue, who's on the run. And this is where we get our first introduction to Sabretooth, who is there presumably to kidnap Wolverine.
There's a tree down in the middle of the road, which Sabretooth probably chopped down or whatever.
Pushed it down. He seems very strong.
Yeah, pretty much beats the shit out of Wolverine right off the bat.
Yeah, it's not even a fight. He just kicks the shit out of him.
It's a very awesome introduction to Cyclops and Storm.
Yeah.
Because you see Sabretooth, and it's kind of snowing, and then in the background, you just see Storm and Cyclops kind of in the foreground, and you start to see Cyclops' eyes just light up.
Yeah, it's a great introduction. And it gets unnatural. It's snowing, but then the snow picks up. It becomes
unnatural.
There, right. Yeah, right. And then, you get the glowing red eyes in the background. It's like, oh, it's the coolest thing ever.
It is.
It's so cool.
It is.
I love it. I'm still pissed off that they sidelined this character for 3 movies. All I ask in the MCU, X-Men, can we please get just a quality Cyclops? Honestly, bring back James Marsden. I don't know if you've seen him recently. Dude hasn't aged a day.
No. And when we get to the second run of these movies, like, we'll get there, but I digress.
Second, what do you mean the second run?
Well, when Bryan Singer comes back.
Oh, you're talking about the future.
Because they didn't make another X-Men team-up movie after X3 for 4 years.
A long time, yeah. Yeah. First Class was after they did try to do a couple of the solo ones, and that failed spectacularly.
But Bryan Singer came back after First Class.
Yeah, because that was
Matthew Vaughn.
Matthew Vaughn, thank you. Yeah. And then he came back for Bryan Singer came back for I think he produced Apocalypse, and he did Days of Future Past. He directed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That apparently, I've never seen it. Apparently, it's good.
Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay. Good. Happy to hear that.
Apocalypse was not.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is also the start of a fascinating and weird cinematic universe. The X-Men universe, I know, is just strange. The timeline gets fucked, and trying to understand it all is bizarre, and it's a very weird franchise.
Anyway. Yes.
And then we get immediately thrown into the world of the X-Men. And I love this. I love 2 things about this. I love that it's not an origin story. We don't spend any time, like, figuring out where Cyclops came from, or meeting Storm, or Rogue, or Jean, or any of that. If this movie was made today, it would be 2 hours of introducing every single character, finding out about their powers, finding out about their past, finding out about their troubles. And then in the last 5 minutes of the movie, they would fight nameless, faceless aliens. They would overcome, and then Wolverine would show up in a post-credit sequence. And this does the opposite.
Yeah.
Wolverine walks into a fully fleshed out world. And this is why I think centering the movie around him is actually smart, because this is a character that we can follow and learn this world with him.
Right.
It's the Harry Potter thing, right?
Right.
Like, he's the orphan boy that needs to go into the wizarding world, and we learn about it with him. It's a smart setup.
X-Mansion is the same mansion in Billy Madison.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I never would have made that connection.
You get little fun cameos of mutants you may know, like Jubilee and things like that in this.
You see a really surprising amount of mutants. Yeah. These days it'd be things you know, TM. Everybody would clap when they see Jubilee.
I gotta say too, it's crazy to me that they didn't put Gambit in this. Because I felt like he was one of the most popular characters from the animated series.
He was. When I think of the animated series, I think of Gambit. The opening episode of the animated series has Gambit sexually harassing a woman, which is really progressive for 1993. I'm shocked he's not. Is he even in the third?
No. The only movie Gambit has made an appearance in is X-Men Origins Wolverine.
He was played by, what's his name, Magic Mike?
Taylor, no.
No.
That was a new one that was going to come out that got canceled.
Okay. I don't even know then.
Taylor
Lautner?
No, not Taylor Lautner. It's Taylor this Swift? Guy they tried to make a big star, and he just, it wasn't cutting it.
I don't know. His name shows up in X-2.
He's the guy in the John, what is it? The John something on Mars or whatever that was like the biggest flop of all
time. Oh!
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember his name. Yeah, John Cena on Mars, I think it was.
John Cena.
No, it was John... Carter on Mars. No,
I think that's you're on the right path there.
Yeah, it was something about that. Okay, whatever. His name shows up in X2. He's on like a list. I noticed that last night while I was watching.
Yeah,
for a split second. That's all we get of Gambit. It's really weird.
Yeah.
I love that the world is fully formed. It's also just, I mean, this whole thing is such a time capsule of pre-MCU Marvel in a good way. Like, it wasn't a shitty Hulk movie. This is a good movie that just doesn't feel like how we do comic book movies these days.
Taylor Kitsch.
Okay.
And the movie was just called John Carter.
Oh.
And it was like the biggest flop of all time.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that one. So we move to the Brotherhood of Mutants. We finally get kind of a clearer view of them.
Correct.
And they are hatching a plan to kidnap the Senator.
Let's talk about Rebecca Romijn Stamos in this.
Okay. Shall I remove my pants?
There's very little to the imagination left in this.
Extremely little left to the imagination. She is in a full body blue makeup suit wearing nothing else for quite a bit of this.
The process to get the makeup on for her consisted of 110 custom designed prosthetics, which covered 60% of her body and took 9 hours to apply. She could not drink wine, use skin creams, nor fly the day before filming because it could have caused her body chemistry to change slightly.
Oh my gosh.
Causing the prosthetics to fall off.
Oh no. Couldn't have that.
Yeah. And this is her in her prime too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
She's great as Mystique.
She's fantastic as Mystique. She really... I think especially in X2, she gets to shine a little bit more personality-wise.
Interesting choice to make her kind of scaly. I think they were kind of trying to make her like a lizard.
Yeah, that's what it seems, yeah.
It makes sense for her to be a shapeshifter to walk around like that because in the comics and in the show, she's usually in a white dress. And, you know, there's a whole... She is Nightcrawler and Rogue's mother.
I didn't know that.
At least in the old lore.
Uh-huh.
In the new lore now... I believe she's a lesbian and she formed a dick and fucked some chick and now there's like some transgender thing going on. They retconned all that in the new comics.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's something.
Oh, and Bobby Drake is gay, which we'll talk more about Iceman in the second movie.
Yeah, he's barely in this.
He is in this, though. Like, him and Rogue kind of have a thing.
Yeah.
Or they're starting to think.
The most sexually frustrated relationship you've ever seen on film. Every scene of him in X2 is just him trying to say as nicely as possible, I'm really horny, and I don't know what to do about it with this girl that I can't touch.
Exactly.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
But we'll talk more about that in X2.
Yeah, so Professor X, they do a X-ray on him. They find out his whole skeleton is adamantium. They think Magneto wants him.
Yeah.
We find out later, the Magneto kidnaps the senator, transforms him into a mutant, which his mutant power is to...
turn into jello?
Yeah, and basically evaporate, because it doesn't take...
In fairness, if I was around Rebecca Romijn for that long, I would also turn into jello, but maybe for a different reason.
And I love the budding... The rivalry between Wolverine and Cyclops, because Jean Grey is in the middle. That's always been a thing in the comics, the cartoon.
I like that they included it. I don't feel anything for it in this movie, or in X2 for that matter. Mm. There's no reason that Jean Grey and Wolverine should be into each other other than he's a bad boy and she's hot, which is like, that's enough, right? But give it a little more breathing room. Give me something here.
It is rushed in.
It's so rushed. He's pulling a full Connery, and he's like shirtless and being like, couldn't wait to get me shirtless again, I see. it's like okay, like we get it. Like, I don't know, give me a little more. And unfortunately, we have both professed our love for Cyclops, but he too in this is just kind of like a wooden character. He's just James Marsden says he played it like a Boy Scout, and that's accurate, but that's also incredibly boring. So there's just nothing to it.
Do you know who Bryan Singer initially wanted to play Wolverine?
A young man who just turned 18? I don't know. A guy who was 18 in a
fighting
day.
Fighting around the world with Russell Crowe.
I could see it. Especially 1999 Russell Crowe. Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah.
Sure. That's just coming off Gladiator.
True. Excuse me. There were some other people that they considered for this too, which I gotta throw these out there. Mel Gibson, Aaron Eckhart, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Viggo Mortensen, Edward Norton, Bob Hoskins.
No, I think Bob, okay, all right, hang on. Let's pause on the Bob Hoskins things, because I've heard that too. That, first of all, great casting, short, hairy man. That was for the previous version of X-Men. That was going to be for like the early 90s version of X-Men, not the 2000 versions, because yes, I've heard that one for years. The rest of those I didn't know about. I don't like any of those.
Van Damme. That would be fucking awful. Imagine
Van Damme as Wolverine. Wolverine doing the splits dance halfway through the movie.
Ugh. So the eventually, though, Rogue runs away because she wakes up Wolverine from a nightmare. He stabs her through the heart, and she absorbs his powers to save herself.
Yes, so Wolverine is having like a really bad nightmare. It's kind of a central point to his character, is that he has amnesia. He doesn't remember who he is, he doesn't remember where he came from, and it all kind of stems from him getting the adamantium claws and getting the work done, which gets explored more in X2. But he's having this horrible nightmare. She walks into his room. The setup of this school is very interesting, by the way. There seems to be sometimes a lot of students, and sometimes there's very few students, and they all seem to have a lot of privilege to just walk wherever they want to.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes into his room. He wakes up in a you know, kind of fit of anger or fear and stabs her, and that's when we see her absorb his powers to heal herself, which will absolutely become relevant later on in the movie.
Right, so then we get this train station scene, which I think is fucking awesome.
I love the train station scene. It's one of those scenes that when I was a kid that stuck in my head maybe more than any other scene. Because you finally get to see the mutants fighting each other. They're all using their powers. I do have a logistical question, though. Rogue has run away. She's embarrassed. Mystique enters the school as Iceman and says, look, everyone hates you. Everyone fears you. You need to leave, and kind of encourages her to run away. Because, again, we now know that Magneto's actually after her.
Right.
We've kind of figured it out. So she runs away to the train station. Logan, this is our first glimpse of Cerebro. Professor X uses Cerebro to find her. I think Cerebro is very cool in this.
Yeah.
And Wolverine gets to her first, and they have a big heart-to-heart. But Cyclops and Storm are also there in the train station to find her. But when Magneto walks out of the train station with Rogue, Magneto and or Cyclops and Storm are just gone.
Yeah.
Where'd they go?
I don't know.
They just left. Like, I guess we've been outdone here.
It's crazy though when he shows up because he rips the front of the train off.
Yeah.
And he flies in. It's just like, it's amazing.
Well, and I love that they did that with Magneto because that's kind of what he did in the cartoon, right? Where he could sort of fly. As long as there was enough metal around, he could make himself fly. Mm-hmm. I think it's really cool they incorporate that into this movie and the next movie a couple times because it's just a cool looking scene.
And then he makes Wolverine spread his arms out because he's got metal, throws him through the train, and then he goes out into the front. All these cops have their guns drawn on him. He starts picking up cars and slamming them on the ground. Takes all their guns out and reverses them and cocks it. I mean, it's very fucking cool, dude. And he makes Professor X drop control of Sabretooth, who's got his arm or his hand around Magneto's throat.
It's a great... He knows Xavier's weaknesses, which is he ultimately loves... Well, he's just a loving guy. He loves humans.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to see anybody get hurt.
Yeah.
So he knows he can just kill people and Charles will let him go, even if... It means sacrificing something that, you know, for the greater good.
Right.
It would be better to let Magneto kill all those people and to get Rogue back and stop his plans. But Charles can't stand to see people get hurt.
Yeah.
So
this brings us to the climax.
One last thing about that train scene. That image of Magneto picking up Wolverine and using the metal to split his hands.
Oh, yeah.
I would almost put that up with the Casino Royale ball busting torture scene as things that made me incredibly uncomfortable in a movie theater. Like something about that splitting his hands open. Ugh.
Yeah, I agree.
It just seems so awful.
I agree.
Yeah.
So that Senator Kelly falls into Jell-O. Mystique has reversed Cerebro and put Professor X in a coma.
Yep. She's poisoned Cerebro.
Right.
Not amazing security measures at this school. That has like nuclear weapons and jets and a mind control device that can literally kill every person on Earth. I guess you can just walk into that room.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you think you'd put a lock on the door.
So they fly into the Blackbird, which is a cool ass jet.
It's an
SR-71, yeah, which is a real jet.
Yeah, it looks incredible in this.
Absolutely.
It looks better in the next one, I think, but it looks good in this.
Yeah. So this takes place on the Statue of Liberty, the final fight here.
Mm-hmm. This is where we get all the mutants battling each other, using their powers against each other.
Opened with,
that's the end of the Storm Toad fight. We get a really amazing Wolverine Sabretooth fight.
Wolverine fight with Mystique, which is really good.
Very good.
He stabs her right in the stomach, and then she disappears, or I think she shapeshifts into a cop and gets medical attention.
That's at the end when she first gets stabbed. She just looks like herself. She's blue. And then at the end, she shapeshifts into like a cop or a security guard and they say, he's alive. Let's get him out of here.
I love it too when he comes out and he goes, whoa, 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 it's me. Cyclops is like, prove it. And he's like, you're a dick. And he's like, that's okay. Good enough. Yeah.
I get it. Yep. Which in fairness, Cyclops kind of is a dick in this movie.
Well, plus these two, they can't stand each other.
They can't stand each other despite the fact that they met 3 days earlier, but they're both trying to sleep with the same woman. Yeah. So
they cut a lot of scenes out from this too. Like there's a whole scene where Cyclops is trying to convince Professor X that he doesn't belong here. Wolverine. They cut that out.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. That would have made him more of a dick.
They had this is X2. There was a different ending for X2 as well, which we'll get into. But so they have this fight on the Statue of Liberty. Wolverine kind of wins the day here. Ends up saving Rogue. Rogue, that's how Rogue gets the white streak in her hair.
Yep, one of my favorite lines from X2. It involves that.
Oh, it was a great line, too, by Wolverine when Magneto's talking about this is for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells him,
you're so full of shit. You're
so full of shit. If you were really so self-righteous, it would be you up there.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is true.
It's true. He's totally right. Yeah. He calls him out immediately. He's like, no, you're not brave. You're a coward, too.
Yeah.
Push comes to shove. You kidnapped a girl to take your powers. If you believe in this so much, you go die up there. Mm-hmm. But you won't. Because you're a coward. Yeah, it's great. Also, I'm pretty sure calling somebody full of shit wouldn't make its way into an MCU movie these days.
Well, I guess not until we get the Deadpool.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah.
Now they're like, we got to change something up here.
Yeah, let's drop a bunch of F-words. Maybe that'll do it.
So the way it ends is Wolverine leaves. He's going to go try to find out his past. And Professor X is visiting Magneto in that awesome cell where it's all plastic.
Oh, man, it's so good.
There's no metal.
It's so good. And you just, it's immediately setting something else up.
Yep.
But not in the Hackney MCU way of like six people stand in a room and go, we should have a conversation and start a team and do a thing or whatever. It's like, ah, okay, you know something else is coming between these two. This isn't over.
Yeah.
You've stopped him today, but somebody else is going to come along and there's going to be another issue. And
well,
of course there is.
He tells him, and again, great interaction. He tells Professor X, you know this prison won't hold me, Charles.
It's a good line.
And then Charles tells him, I know that, and when you get out, I'll be waiting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the battle's going to continue on, which
yep.
I thought this movie was fucking great when I first saw it, and nothing's changed here. This held up way better than I expected.
Way better than I expected. You know, like I was saying, I expected to go into this and be disappointed and think, oh man, okay, all right. You know, I'm nostalgic for it, but oh boy, this is looking pretty rough.
Yeah.
It's got some moments, but for the most part, I think it's very solid. And as an example of a pre-MCU Marvel movie, I think this is, it's excellent. I so enjoyed it. And, you know, one last note I wanted to make is we didn't really talk about, because you're talking about things that were cut. This movie is brisk. It never slows down. It's an hour and 45 minutes, praise be, and it never comes up for air. It's always moving. It's always doing something. There's no fat. It's just constantly going forward. And I really appreciated that. Like, again, it's just not something you get these days. These days, this movie would be 3 hours long. And maybe it'd be great, but it was just like a different time and place and way of making movies.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you something. I'm going to ask you about this, about X2. But if you were to rank this in the pantheon of Marvel movies, MCU movies, other movies, Madam Web, where would this fall for you? About.
Honestly, man, that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's got to crack top 10 for me.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this and X2, they're right up there. As you know, and I put Spider-Man 2 in that category as well, the Raimi Spider-Man 2.
Sure, sure.
And you know, honestly, the first two Blades are extremely good too.
Yeah, Blade 2 in particular I think is really, really good. It I is. Like Blade 1 as well, but I think Blade 2 is like the good one.
Now that would be something we can do down the road too, is
Blade?
Try to a huge ranking show where we try to bunch all of these. Oh, for God's sake. Dude.
Oh my gosh. Trying to kill me. I mean, it would be an excuse for me to watch Ant-Man again.
Matt, I'm going to need you to go back and watch Elektra.
Oh, God. Okay, well, I'm going to need you to go back and watch a silent film from the 1920s.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I would probably rank this, honestly, if we're including everything, this would be my favorite of all of them.
Really?
Yeah, I just, like, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the MCU. I like it. It's got its moments. It's fun, but I mean, of course, I don't know if this is better than Ant-Man. That's a cinematic masterpiece. But I genuinely think this would be my favorite of all of them. It feels like a real movie. It doesn't feel like they're doing corporate product number 12. It doesn't feel like they're doing big setup for team up down the road. It just feels like they took a comic book and they made a really good movie out of it, and that a director had a vision and he executed that, and it gets even better in X2. I like this so much.
Well, thematically too, I think it resonates with you a lot more than we have to get the Infinity Stones.
So much more. I mean, yeah. Really, I can't underscore enough how I did. Like I was saying earlier, like I like this because it's political, but like I'm kind of not kidding. Like I like movies or anything that has something to say. I like the idea that this is silly movies doing social commentary. It's so much more interesting to me. Yeah, than like we have to stop Glorblor from getting the time stone, so he doesn't turn back the clock and turn us all into his slaves because he wants us to mine the enriched potassium on planet Zendor. I mean, like, who gives a fuck? Like, this is so much more interesting to me.
That's fucking hilarious. That'll do it for
this is it.
This episode.
We finally did X-Men, yep. And I loved every minute of it.
All right, we'll see you guys next week for X2.
Bye, everyone.